Good evening and welcome to Horror. I'm Lee.
I'm Chris.
I am Adam.
And we're here this evening for another We've Been Watching, where we run through all the shit we've been watching in the last 6 weeks since we last did one of these, to try and squeeze it all into not enough time.
Yeah.
But before that, we do have some housekeeping to cover. Adam?
Well, first off, we put it up on Instagram, but this is the first sort of recording we've done since it happened. We our very good friend and designer of our logos, guest on Welcome to Horror, co-host on Mos Eisley Happy Hour, but Mos Eisley Happy Hour, Mr. Wesley Smith has unfortunately passed away, and we're not going to sort of go into anything too much at the moment, and we're probably going to look to talking about it more as on a later episode, you know, maybe focus on like just paying tribute to our amazing friend.
We
And
could
yeah,
like
he
see, I mean, some of the artwork he's done, you know, certainly
oh
crosses over with the sort of things we cover, and we can
well and
mention.
well he had he also had his own podcast, As Yet
Yeah,
Unexplained,
absolutely.
which is definitely in the wheelhouse of a lot of listeners, and I think a lot of our listeners listen to that. And you know, so many sort of so many people have reached out on Instagram and sort of like, you know, who he we know on, and he spoke to and he knew as well. And yeah, it's quite sudden, obviously deeply sad. All our love goes out to Sam and his family. And yeah, we'll talk about it more when we're sort of more able to. For the moment, it's yeah, just a very sad time. And but yeah, hopefully we can we'll pay him a better tribute at some point. But for the moment, just goodbye, Wes, and thank you for everything, mate.
Yeah, well said.
Rest in peace, my friend.
Yeah. As well as that, there is some other news, more uplifting news, as it were. We can't give too much away at the moment. It's still all happening, and is for several months to go. But a friend of the show, Sean, contacted us, and we were chatting, and we've discovered he's been working on some recent local horror movies that have been going on, involving a lot of people who we've been seeing their films and we've been discussing in recent months and years, from Horror on Sea and Romford Horror Film Festival. And as a result, Adam and I had the opportunity to go and be extras in an upcoming movie.
Yes.
That is really cool.
Oh, it was fucking awesome. It was just, I said, no, we can't give anything away, so we can't give away who was there or to whom we were
As tempting as
speaking,
it is.
or oh yeah, it's
Oh, it's so tempting, believe me. We rest assured, we took plenty of photographs on set, and we were
Excellent.
speaking to people. Obviously, you know, this is it's not our production. They were very kind to allow us to go on set and to allow us to be part of the whole thing. So, you know, we won't be posting anything in that sense. You know, we won't be putting up anything that could be spoilerific or even just to give any of the game away. But yeah, it was a very a very exciting day.
It was excellent. So we just wanted, just in case anyone involved is listening, yeah, we just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you so much again. Obviously, once the film is announced and we know more of when it's going to be coming out and stuff, then we're going to shoot our load and tell you all about it. But yeah, until then, we're going to keep it under wraps. But what we did find out, and we can discuss because it is non-related almost, SeaWork Productions were there. Someone from SeaWork Productions was there. which is it was a new writer director who's in the process of doing their first movie. They're going to be shooting, I think she said, 7 weeks from the day that we saw her on set. And it sounds fantastic. It's called The Domestication of Vampires in Essex. it's first piece of work. It's a short film, but she has got such a fantastic cast, and she's so excited about it. Like, you know, when someone's so excited, you can't help but get sort of drawn into it, and all of a sudden you go, she was just bubbling over with excitement.
I'm wondering, Domestication of Vampires in Essex, but Domestication of Vampires. Yeah, well, that certainly sounds like...
We shall
see. I've got to find out what that's about.
Yeah. That's what I watched. Well, as soon as we had the title, we were like, yep, we're in. That's good.
Yeah.
We're already there.
Yep.
But she's very kindly agreed, once shooting is complete, to come on and discuss what it was like to go out and make this film.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, and then obviously we'll be behind backing this all the way because it sounds fantastic. So, yes, it was one of a plethora of very exciting and really interesting people who we got to speak to at the weekend. It was a long day. I think we were on set for about 11 hours in total. And
yeah, probably around that, yeah.
Yeah, and about 2.5 to 3 hours of shooting, and the rest of it was just kind of hanging around. But because there were people coming in and out and everybody else was hanging around, we just had a great... It was like a party all day. It was just different people coming in, and everybody was interesting and funny. And, oh, yeah, we had absolute killer time. So thank you, Sean. And do you know what? I'm going to say it. Thank you to Sing Lao as well, who also helped us put this together. It's the only name I will mention because he's involved in so much stuff. So I can say that and it won't give too much away. But, but yeah, nearer the time, we will be gushing about everybody else who was there and how amazing everything was. Can't wait for that.
Sounds amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, we've just got to sit on that now for a little while. And like excited but broody hens.
Yeah. Yes, so let's cover what we've been watching. Let's start this evening with Chris. We've been watching.
Okay, so I've had a fun one. So a little while back now, I decided to start watching a wonderful film gifted to me this Christmas by Adam called Southland Tales. And after not too long into it, I thought, this probably isn't quite the right thing to cover. And also, I'm probably going to have to watch this maybe once or twice more before I fully understand what's going on in it.
Oh, yeah.
Either I'm getting more stupid or it's a little bit harder to follow than Donnie Darko.
I will say that it certainly does. You, when you watch Southland Tales, you go, oh, Donnie Darko was quite commercial.
Yeah.
In terms of that in was, terms that of its sort of like definitely. Straightforwardness.
Yeah, it certainly did come to mind. Yeah, but so I'm not covering that one. Instead, I decided to watch a film that is connected with a series that I've definitely been planning to go back and watch because I saw it quite a long time ago. Now, again, I sort of got to the point where I was like, this is more confusing than I expected. And I expect it to be quite confusing. Is there a reason for that? And so I'm going to have to ask Adam and Lee what you both think. But if you haven't guessed it already, I'm just going to give you a few sentences that I've drawn up to hint at what it could be. So, I share a kinship with Blue Velvet in exploring the dark underbelly of quaint town life. Though our melodies differ, our themes intertwine darkly. And back to another reference. Like Donnie Darko, I delve into the surreal side of youth, but swap the synthesizer for a more orchestral mourning. And imagine if the X-Files met a composer known for deep, unsettling orchestrations and pure, eerie human mysteries. And in the cold corridors, similar to The Shining, you'll find my story unwinding. Not composed by Wendy Carlos, my soundtrack still chills the spine. Now, either some of those completely don't make any sense, or they will once you know what it is, or they are good. I'm not sure.
No fucking idea whatsoever.
Okay, yeah, that's fair enough. No idea. All right.
I recognize everything in there except the context.
How do you right, okay, so I've got one more that hopefully, well, I'm fairly certain this will give it away. I'm not Mulholland Drive, but I traverse similar eerie landscapes. My melodies, though not penned by Bernard Herrmann, echo with a similar spectral resonance. Which film am I?
Jesus.
Is it Firewolf
Christ.
With Me?
It is. It is.
Yeah.
Well done.
Wow.
So, do any of those others actually help? Now you know.
Not in the slightest, because I mean, Blue Velvet and Mulholland Drive are both David Lynch.
Yeah, so but I wondered if that is worth watching as well.
Yes.
Blue Velvet is, so
did you watch Twin Peaks the series?
So I did. I saw the original, but I saw it about 20 years ago, and you've obviously mentioned it a few times.
Yeah.
And in my head, I know what happens, and I remember it being fantastic, but I'm not sure. So I definitely have to watch that again. Anyway, I was going to do that, and then I saw the film, and I was like, oh, look, I'll watch the film. And it turns out I didn't exactly know what to expect, but it starts off as I sort of remember, right? But then I was like, where's this going? It's like getting more weird, and it's not exactly about a detective story. It's now sort of a very traumatic experience of Laura Palmer.
Yes.
And then I realize it is a prequel, and, you know, it starts to make more sense. But it's still it is very surreal all the way through.
It's absolutely surreal. I'm sort of treading ground here because I do, me and Claire sort of are going to start watching Twin Peaks. So
okay.
I want to be somewhat cagey in that sense because that's the thing is, I feel that like a lot of prequels, it does have the thing of you should see it after.
Okay. So that's what I was sort of getting to. I was like, should I have actually just watched the series first again?
If you saw the series, at least you know.
Yeah,
going on and everything else like that. So, but definitely, yeah. So, because I remember when I first saw Firewalk With Me, I was a bit disappointed because I really enjoyed the very weird first half, the first like 20 minutes with Chris Isaac and Kiefer Sutherland.
There is some odd scenes, and David Bowie turns up. What is going on?
We're not going to talk about Judy. We're not going to talk about Judy at all. We're going to leave her out of it. Who do you think this is there? And that was just me just highlighting to David Lynch because they did in the sequel series that they did recently, they actually got a Bowie impersonator in. I can do a bit of Bowie.
Okay.
So if David Lynch, if David Lynch is listening, which we know he is, obviously, you know, if you
he's obviously
decide
present.
To do it. Yeah, if you need to do any more, you know, I am offering up my clenched teeth as a Bowie impersonator.
I second
but no,
it.
I yeah, and but then the second half, because that's the thing is, I think a lot because I remember a lot of fans were very divided by the film because the film is a lot harsher.
Yeah.
In so
much that's
as,
what I was.
In the sort of strangest way, it's kind of like because Laura Palmer's murder is the catalyst of the entire of Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And as a backstory and a way of getting into the town, and then you meet all these quirky characters and all their sort of little foibles, and you get all these other bits that shoot off of it and everything else like that, you kind of almost forget. Oh no, this is actually about someone's
dark,
awful fucking life.
Yeah.
And then finally being, you know, someone's awful victimhood. And then the final days of that. And it's fucking hellish.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and that's the thing is also David Lynch at that point, it was like, right, we're doing this as a movie. It's not on TV. You know, that you can kind of get away with more because there's a greater guardianship of who can get in and see it. Or certainly, you know, in terms of if it's on at the cinema, I'd imagine things have changed now because of the way everything works. Pretty much anyone can watch any film at home.
Well,
so they probably have a greater awareness that, yeah, it's possible. But back in 93 or something like that. And again, thank you, Wes, because the only reason I saw it is he taped it off the telly, off of Sky for me. So, because I was like, I've got to fucking see it. But yeah, it was a very sort of, but a lot of the fans didn't like it because it wasn't
the
sort of
quite
quirky, catchphrasy end of Twin Peaks. It was much more the fucking darkness.
Brutal,
and the
dark.
Surrealness underneath it.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot in there that's quite sort of, it's a very fucking troubling film.
It is, yeah. But so it'd be interesting, to watch the series again, and perhaps if we even cover it, then if you're watching it or talk about it again. And
Well, because I think also what happened was, is I'm not sure quite whether it was always intended to be the sort of prequel thing, but apparently at the time, Carl McLachlan, who plays Dale Cooper in the series, was kind of like, I don't want to just be typecast as Dale Cooper. And the show had been quite a success. The show had concluded at that point. Mm-hmm. And then it was like a couple of years down the line, do I want to do this again? Which, you know, a lot of actors do have to make that decision of like, do I want to? So although he agreed to be in it, he wasn't in it as a main character. So they couldn't continue the story in that sort of sense because he wasn't in it enough. And I think because of that, there was also a thing when you watch Twin Peaks, it's kind of like you realize how many lives Laura's involved with. But in terms of it being her last few days, she probably wouldn't have made, you know, it wouldn't show her dealing with everyone.
No, yeah.
Or, you know, so you lost a lot of the characters that had become fan favorites, you know, and stuff like that. And there's like, you know, so a lot of that. There is a version of it, though. There's a thing called The Missing Pieces, which is round about an hour and a half's worth of stuff that was cut out. I think the film's nearly 2 hours long.
Yeah.
But David Lynch had more stuff that was in there with the locals of Twin Peaks. So there was more to be in there. But obviously, you were then talking like a 3.5 hour film or whatever.
Yeah.
The studio probably wasn't going to go for that. And also, you know, it's quite an ask.
But it would make for a good miniseries on Netflix now.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, the missing parts is a fascinating thing to watch. And it is just great because it's like, great, more Twin Peaks, which is always good. But I think, they sort of like, the decision was right. We're going to focus on this being Laura Palmer's story. And in a curious way, I mean, obviously, Cheryl Lee, who plays Laura Palmer, is an amazing actress.
She's great. Seriously great.
But it's kind of lucky that basically she was obviously originally picked as to be someone who looked right and then to be found as a body. And then I think she turns up in the series as Laura's cousin, Maddie. And I think that was almost like they suddenly were like, actually, she's a really good actress. So, you know, she could do more in this. And yeah, it's a real sort of showcase for her and Ray Wise as Leland and Grace Zabriskie as Sarah, the parents. It's a hell of a one. And it's certainly, unlike, say, for example, like with Star Wars, where it's now you kind of think, oh, well, you should start with the prequels. I would argue no, because you get given too much away. You know, it's not really much of a revelation when everyone knows Empire Strikes Back. You know, if you start in release order, then you get a much better sort of sense experience. Of all the surprises that are going to be in there and stuff. Although obviously, if you watch Return of the Jedi before any of the prequels, it's like, well, that's clearly the fucking Emperor, and that's still clearly the Emperor just because he's got a hoodie on. It's not changed that. Firewalk with Me is definitely, I wouldn't say to anyone watch that before
watch that
you
no it. Yeah, okay,
because the series is so, you know, is so driven by the mystery of who did this. And you know, obviously in the film they show you, so you know who killed Laura Palmer, so it becomes Yeah, it takes away that element that you wouldn't have the fun of the guessing game that Twin Peaks is or kind of was.
Yeah, Bears made me. I'm very tempted to watch some more David Lynch films again.
Oh, mate, go for it.
So that was a fun one.
And it's also, I mean, just the score for it is.
That stays with you so much.
Yeah, it's so fucking haunting. Excellent choice, sir. But I would say now go and rewatch the series and just love it again.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely. Adam, what did you watch?
Well, I'm going to go. One thing I'm going to mention is I did see Late Night with the Devil at the cinema, like a proper person. Went with former guest Drew, and we both thoroughly enjoyed it. But it's coming on Shudder soon. Everyone should get to see it. And it's a I want to do an episode on it, and I think you guys will feel similarly once it's actually out and you've seen it. So I won't go into that too much. I am going to go very weird here, though, in that I am the film I've watched, which is a short film from 1983 called Possibly in Michigan. It's on YouTube. It's about 12 minutes long. And basically, my good lady wife and scientific advisor, she watches a lot of TikTok. She is far too old for that sort of thing, but then so am I. So who am I to judge? Because she's not a teenager or a predatory male in her 50s. So what she's doing on TikTok, we don't know. but a lot of weird stuff comes up on there. And basically, there was a very strange sound effect that was doing the rounds on there. A lot of it's sort of sounds and things like that just go viral or people use and everything else like that. And there was this thing where it was a woman sounding slightly deranged, going on about, she put her poodle in a microwave. And we found out what this thing was. And it was from a short film called Possibly in Michigan, directed by Cecilia Condit, with music by Karen Skladani, who is also one of the three actors in the film. And basically, it's a very disjointed little piece of two women being pursued round a shopping mall by a man with a mannequin face. And it is very much in the sort of sense of the Lynchian end of this feels weird, this feels icky and uneasy and just doesn't sit right. It's very bizarre. The music, which is is done by Karen Skladani, who is one of the actors in it, is very strange, like homemade Casio sort of almost like Devo sounding sort of stuff. It's basically it sounds a lot like an album that me and Dean would try and force you to listen to, Lee, and not be happy about it. It's a very weird thing, and sort of I've started watching some of her other shorts, and yeah, it's just this weird little underbelly of these sort of home movie, like home video sort of shot films that she made. And she's still making films today. It's a very odd little... Basically, it's like having a little 12-minute nightmare to yourself.
Yeah.
But apparently, and this is the thing that sort of interested me as well, is that it's kind of inspired by Celia Condit was dating a man called Ira Einhorn. And it turns out that... And she freely admits herself that she was on medication that meant that she had no sense of smell while she was dating him. He'd killed his ex-girlfriend and had her mummified in the cupboard.
Oh, shit.
While she was dating him and found out later. Apparently the case is referred to as the Unicorn Killer, which sounds a lot more interesting than it is, but because his name's Einhorn, which is like one horn. One's enough, let's just say, for any killers listening, one's enough, okay? You don't have to keep going. But, so it's sort of a sort of almost like a sort of dealing with that or trying to react to that. But basically, yeah, so these two girls are pursued around a shopping mall by a very strange man who then follows them to their house, and then they exact their revenge upon him. And frankly, it'll be the weirdest fucking 10 minutes you spend this week if you go and look it up. And Claire was particularly interested in seeing what you made of it, Chris, because because it's very strange little thing. And it's one of those lovely things where we found out what this sound was from, looked it up online, and suddenly there's whole loads of people and hundreds of articles and saying, oh, you're not, this, and I've discovered this whole new little pool of weird film. And I was very I was very pleased with it. So I was certainly as a gateway drug to that, as well as being just a very entertaining, disorienting little piece. Go and find it. It's like I say, all over YouTube, so it's very easy to find. And if any listeners out there know TikTok, there'll probably be bits of it where you go, oh yeah, I have heard that before, like overdubbed over someone making a cake or something. But yeah.
Interesting. So I caught up following the review that we heard a couple of months ago from Adam Von Art. I decided to go as soon as I got the opportunity and check out Death Rider in the House of Vampires, the Glenn Danzig movie.
Oh yes,
the cowboy vampire film. I don't disagree with anything Adam said. I think that's important to say up front.
You can't disagree with he'll be a councillor soon.
I know. Yeah, you can't disagree with someone in Parliament.
No,
but he's America though; they don't count over there. But I found it more entertaining than I was expecting. I think because he'd said how terrible it was, but I was like, I can't not watch a film with that concept, so I have to go and see it. So I did. And I probably won't rewatch it, but that being said, I wouldn't be surprised if one night, 1 o'clock in the morning, drunk, can't get to sleep, I want something stupid that if I fall asleep halfway through, I don't give a shit. It'll work for that. It is fairly slow going. It's quite a nice looking film. I thought it looked really good.
Is it Danzig directed or starring or
both? Both, or both? Obviously, yeah.
He's garnering it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you can tell it's written by Danzig. I mean, compared to the last film of, was it his? I saw, but no. It's the first one of his I've seen, I think. But, yeah, I mean, give you an idea of what it is. The first 10 minutes is a man leading a topless woman with enormous boobs across a desert on a horse so that she's having to jiggle around a lot and nothing is happening. It's just a woman jiggling on top of a horse for about 10 minutes.
Patrick Stewart wasn't the director? Yeah.
It got to the point where even I was like, I'm going to fast forward through this because I mean,
that's enough.
Like, it's a nice visual for 30 seconds. And then you're like, yeah, I need more than this out of this film, really.
Verotica, that was the other film we did, wasn't it?
That was it.
Broke cover for a while. And then everyone just went, yes, yeah.
I don't think I got to the end of that one.
No.
I did make it to the end of this one. It did take me 3 nights to watch it, but I did make it to the end of it.
So what's the concept then?
It sounds like a spoiler, but it isn't, because you know straight away as soon as it. Basically, a guy turns up who is a vampire at a vampire sanctuary in the desert. They're all cowboy vampires, and he basically turns up and says, "I'm seeking sanctuary. I've brought this virgin for you to have as payment." And it transpires that he is a vampire, but he's there to kill all of the other vampires, whom we, Glenn Danzig, obviously, Eli Roth, The Soska sisters are in it very briefly. What's his name? Julian Sands is the head of the vampires. So, like, it's got a really solid cast. And it looks pretty nice. Some of the southern accents are so shonky, it's painful. But, I enjoyed it. I thought, you know, like, he went out there, he did it. Some of the writing is god-awful. I saw it a couple of weeks ago now, but I seem to remember one line getting repeated ad nauseum, or one phrase or something. But again, I didn't really take notes, and I watched it over 3 nights because I kept putting it on and getting about half an hour in and being like, I'm definitely going to fall asleep if they leave this on any longer. So I'd have to stop it. And then the next night came back and did exactly the same thing again. So, but yeah, it's don't pay for it, but if you get a chance when it pops up on Amazon or whatever, definitely give it a watch.
It didn't anger you. That's...
No. I came away and I was like, I enjoyed my time with it. It isn't. If I'd squirreled around and struggled to find it when it was first released and I'd paid over the odds for it, I would have been a bit pissed off. But
yeah,
not a terrible film at all. So,
fair play.
Chris.
All right. So I watched something that I thought, I was like, I'll give it a go. Like, I'm not sure I could talk about it. And then I started watching it. I was like, no, this is actually amazing. Like, really good. I just loved watching it. Right. So it was on Shudder. It's the 101 greatest horror moments, but also kind of film. So, because it mentions a few of the moments in the film, right? So I thought I'll watch the first episode, but then I thought I'll watch the top three, let's see what they are, and then I'll talk about those. And like, and just watching them back again and hearing people talk about them and just seeing the clips at the same time, and it's the different directors, and it's just like, it so brings it back. And you realize, as we've said many times, like, that you remember films in a certain way, and it's like you watch it again, it's like, no, there's a lot more there than you've remembered, even though you think you remembered it all. But yeah, so I'll go through the top three fairly quickly, and I'll sort of read out what they are, and you can see if you appreciate it just as much. So, and I just did not expect necessarily what they were going to choose. But so third is Hereditary, and of course it's the decapitation.
Yeah.
About the way that it happens and the build up to it, and then the fact that the camera stays on the brother's face and he's just lying there motionless and through the night, and then in the morning you can hear the parents talking in the background, and it's kept in the background. Then they start screaming, and he's just laying there traumatized, and you're like, that is a big scene already. And then at the very end of it, where you're almost like, you're just relieved it's ending, you suddenly see the decapitated head with ants crawling all over it
on
the road, and it's like, oh, it suddenly hit again. And it's just like,
you don't get a let up with it.
No, it is unbelievable.
You sort of think, oh, well, they've done that. Oddly, you kind of go, well, that's tastefully done.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Right, yeah.
For a roadside beheading.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, no, they're showing it as no. Well done.
Yeah, so that, like, yeah, amazing to see it again. So, again, want to watch that film again. Then the next one, again, bit of a surprise, but it was The Thing. And again, like, in my head, there's no way I would have expected it to be number two. I remember it as being a fantastic film, really good fun, great action, with maybe a few horror bits throughout, right? But it's kind of not when they show it to you and remind you. It's like, so they show you, like, essentially a few of the scenes, and it's the fact that you're kind of on edge because you don't know what the thing is going to be. Is it going to be someone you know, or an animal? And then, yeah, and the way it changes and the practical effects, it's like, no, they are really good. Like, just it encapsulates everything you really want.
It's a fucking amazing fucking film. What bit of The Thing was it?
Yeah, well, so they showed a few different bits of it changing, they showed the dog, and it's like, overall, it was really good. So, absolutely, I want to watch that again. And then number one, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? And again, like, you remember it amazing, but then they just show the clip of Kirk walking to the house, and the way he just trips over the ramp, and then suddenly Leatherface appears and just whack with the blunt, brutal hammer. And just from there on, it's like, oh, and then they show the bit where she's picked up and put on the hook, and you don't even see the hook, right? You don't see anything almost, and yet in your head it is awful, and it is. It's just so well done.
you put so much into that film that's not there.
Yeah, like absolutely. It's crazy.
You know, which like, and ironically, even at the end, compared to Hereditary, which actually shows you a lot. Some,
I don't know. But even then, like the girl escapes and you see Leatherface chasing, and then like the very end, he's sort of dancing around with the sunset behind him, and it's a weird juxtaposition. It's almost nice, but it's still awful, and she's so traumatized, and it's captured something amazing. So yeah, so yeah, it turned out that watching
she's
that,
she's got away, but she ain't ever going to be right.
Not she's not got away. Yeah.
No.
So it was. I loved watching some of these and seeing what people had to talk about. So yeah, it was really good. I'd recommend watching that for everyone.
Well, I'll check that out. Yeah.
Yeah, I will as well, because as Adam mentioned, Late Night with the Devil comes out in 3 days.
That's on Shudder.
So I will be getting Shudder to watch that. So while I'm on there, I'll definitely go and check that out as well, because that sounds excellent. Mm. Excellent. So, Adam, what else have you been watching?
Well, obviously on a previous episode, I mentioned Thriller, which I understand you've been diving through
it's
now as well, Lee.
Through, yeah, about 20 odd episodes in, I think, maybe more.
Yeah, which is a fantastic series. But me and Claire are embarking across a lot of anthology stuff, old anthology series. Mm. And Claire got me the complete Night Gallery for Christmas.
Ooh.
And we have now finished that. Three series. And so it was Rod Serling who created and wrote a lot of The Twilight Zone. This is the series that came after The Twilight Zone. Hmm. And it's sometimes called Rod Serling's The Night Gallery. And Rod Serling appears on camera and presents each segment. And in his usual nimble style, where he's very... Because he is the most David Lynch person I know, because he just looks like someone. He looks like what you imagine the guy from the FBI should look like. And, you know, he'll be on the side of right, but he will chin you. You know, but he's also, just this genius anyway in terms of writing and stuff. But the Night Gallery was what they did as a sort of follow-up to it. And it's ran for three series between 70 and 73. There was a pilot version of it, which was like an hour TV movie with three different stories in it, one of which features Roddy McDowall. And that's one thing you get with the Night Gallery, is you get a lot of amazing actors in there and stuff like that. And basically what it was, the shows were like, the pilot's like an hour and a half, but the shows are like 50 minutes. The first two series, the shows are 50 minutes, and then they went down to 25 minutes in the third series. But basically you get between one and four stories per episode. So some of the later series, you only get one because they had a shorter runtime. So you got like one 25 minute episode, but the 50 minutes, you can get sort of four stories in there. And basically, so the premise is that he's presenting to you from the Night Gallery, and he will show you a painting, describe it briefly, and that leads into the story and what the story is. And The Twilight Zone's a lot more sort of sci-fi, or sort of, you know, that more that end, whereas this is much more horror in its sort of more obvious forms. And the producer of it is a guy called Jack Laird. Basically, I think him and Rod Serling had a bit of a falling out, because as well as getting, like, say, a 20-minute short, they also interspersed them with what can best be described as sketches. They're like little one-hit scenes, usually funny, usually very Mickey takes sort of, and those ones feature archetypes like vampires and the Phantom of the Opera and stuff like that. And often they're like sketches from a sketch show. There'll be a short little, almost like, here's the setup, punchline, next story. And apparently Rod Serling wasn't very keen on them. I think they work brilliantly, because
oh, interesting.
because you get these, so you get like the longer stuff, which is the more thoughtful or the more horror based, or, you know, more story basically. And then you get a nice little palate cleanser of like a sort of 2 minute sketch. And then you get another story like that. And then they round the whole thing off with another like minute long sketch or something like that. And it works really well. I think Rod Serling thought that it took away from the atmosphere, but I actually think it enhances it because it just makes you get more of a, you know, you get more variety.
Yeah. More content the same.
Yeah. And some of the sketches are brilliant. There's one called Professor Peabody's Last Lecture, and it's Carl Reiner is a lecturer in a university, but he's going through the Cthulhu mythos and basically unleashes something because he's saying all the names of Cthulhu and all the various others, you know. And so there's really sort of, there's great funny ones, there's really sort of dark stuff, very much like that sort of Twilight Zone thing. You get sort of like, you'll get the occasional one that's just like a really thoughtful piece or something like that, and then there's some sort of real sort of, there's nasty ones, supernatural, a lot of supernatural stuff, a lot of just really great bits and pieces. But a lot of it is adaptions, and you've got, and there's a lot of weird fiction writers. So you've got stuff like Fritz Lieber, Algernon Blackwood, Clark Ashton Smith, Margaret St. Clair, Chetwynd Haynes, Hayes, nice. Who obviously did Monster Club and a lot, August de Lerth, Lovecraft, Manly Wade Wellman, and just a lot of really sort of weird sort of stories. So you get a lot of those uncanny and sort of, you know, this magazines that used to come out with a lot of short stories. So you got stuff in there like that, and they're really great. And like I say, in terms of actors, you've got like a big deep breath here: Joanna Pettit, John Astin, Victor Bueno, Burgess Meredith, Bill Bixby, Mark Hamill, Leslie Nielsen, Adam West, Tom Bosley, Agnes Moorehead, John Saxon, Orson Welles, David McCullum, Phyllis Diller, Patrick McNee, Edward G. Robinson, Leonard Nimoy, Dean Stockwell, Elsa Lanchester, Cesar Romero. So there's a lot of like the Batman faces in there, and sort of like 60s Batman faces in there, and just really great fucking actors. And you will get the thing that you sometimes get with Thriller Lee, where when you're watching it, you're going, I've seen this guy in something, and then you find out, yeah, it was six episodes before.
Yeah.
He was in the Night Gallery already. Yeah, so, but also, yeah, there's just so many sort of like great names in there. But the one that I know is the real sort of appetite whetter, you get two stories with Vincent Price.
Yeah, I'm buying this.
And
it does sound amazing.
Before Vincent Price was on it, but now,
seriously, so you get there's a story called Return of the Sorcerer, which is very like what you would hire Vincent Price to do, where he's a weird magician with an assistant who's hiring a man to document and translate his odd tomes. And at one point, they're at dinner. At the dinner table is the guy who's being hired, the apprentice, Vincent Price, the sorcerer, and a large black goat. And he introduces the black goat. This is my father who built this house and is back with us. He goes by the name of the Falling Tower. And yeah, it's one of those shows where you're sort of like, oh, you know your shit. Do you know what I mean? Because there's stuff they reference in there and things like that, even from that time, that you're like, oh yeah, you guys are steeped in this sort of weird fiction lore and stuff like that. And but the other one that Vincent Price does, he does one called Class of 99, which is one written by Rod Serling. And I'm not going to take away any of its power, I think, but you know, I will sort of, because it's kind of a giveaway of what is going on. But basically, you watch a class being manipulated, like a room full of students being manipulated by Vincent Price to be absolutely thoroughly horrible to each other. So there's people being classist, racist, sexist. It's just, and just, you know, just everyone's backbiting and attacking at people and really sort of emoting their dislike of each other. And it turns out that what it actually is Vincent Price is teaching robots how to be human. And it's just the fucking bleakness of this thing where it's like, yeah, to really look like humans, yeah, you've got to be a bunch of venal assholes. You've got to learn to hate to be a human being.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the message of it. And it's like everything all right at home, Rod. So, but seriously, it's wonderful because this is probably one of the best things. And Vincent Price is so fucking chilling in it. It's Vincent Price, but it's not Vincent Price the way the other one is. The other one is, right, we've hired Vincent Price because we've written Vincent Price.
Yeah.
This is much more, we've got this part, Vincent Price has been given it, and he is fucking chilling.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And it's like, because I love Vincent Price, but it's one of those lovely reminders. It's like, no, you're a fucking...
He can, yeah.
You know, it's not a series of tics and tropes or familiar things or typecasting. You are a shit-hot actor. This is... really, really good. But yeah, so Claire has even suggested that if she gets a birthday request this year, she'd just like us to watch a couple of the episodes.
Oh, cool.
Or like some, but maybe like a few segments from it or something. I think they're probably findable places. So.
No, that is the excuse that I need to go and buy the complete box set. I'm looking at it on my other screen right now, and I'm going to order it as soon as we're finished on here.
Request granted.
I've seen
like the first episode and absolutely loved it, and I've not seen anything since.
Yes. That first episode, the one with Roddy, because you've got
that is the Roddy McDowell one, isn't it?
Yeah, you've got Joan. There's the segment with Joan Crawford as well, where she's the horrible woman who wants to buy Tom Bosley's eyes, and it's one of Steven Spielberg's first like director jobs.
All right.
And like, you know, and so there's lots of, you know, there's a lot going on in it. But that one with Roddy McDowell and Ozzie Davis, I will also tell you, Lee, because as soon as I go, Potify, which as anyone watches that episode, spends their whole time going, Potify? Oh, what is it? Potify? Potify? Osmond Potify. And it's just fucking endlessly repeated.
I was going to say, it's not just you, because Adam was here last weekend with my brother, and he said, I've been watching the Night Gallery, and that was all he said, and my brother immediately went, Port a Fire, and they both did it for about 5 minutes, and then we talked about something else. So I never found out what they were on about there.
But yeah, so we were just, Port a Fire. And there's a supercut on YouTube, someone's done of it. It's like about 3 fucking minutes, and it's like, it's not a long word.
Yeah, in a 15-minute segment, 3 minutes of it is the same word.
But yeah, I mean, there's, and like I say, I personally don't agree with Rod Serling, because that's my understanding, is that he thought that the sort of smaller sketches ruined the mood. I think they're excellent little palate cleansers between two dramas. I mean, there's stuff in there. There's like an episode called The Caterpillar where a man has a mind-burrowing parasite, and that's fucking disturbing as all arseholes. And Burgess Meredith and his medical kit from the future. And yeah, it's just fucking excellent stuff.
Yeah, that rings a bell. Was that the first episode as well?
I think it's first series. So maybe you've seen some of the first series. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go and watch that now.
That does sound amazing.
Yeah. It's definitely in the Welcome to Horror wheelhouse, I would say.
Yeah, definitely sounds it. So my final full thing I'd like to discuss, again, like with Chris, this was a gift from Adam, a super early birthday present, because he thought my birthday was in March and not May. And when it arrived...
Sounds similar.
When it arrived, I said to him, I ain't waiting. I'm watching this. So,
and apologies, Chris, because I thought your birthday's right near Lee. So I nearly got your birthday present as well. It was only when I asked for your address that Jeff pointed out It ain't their birthdays this month, you prat.
But mine had already been ordered. Woo! So after the Romford Horror Film Festival, where we saw How to Kill Monsters, and we discussed it, and Adam said, oh, yes, there is a Book of Monsters, which is almost the same cast which came out before it in 2018. He purchased me that and had it sent directly to my house.
Excellent.
Excuse me. Yes, and I watched that, and oh yeah, again, it's, you can see how they've tuned it to get the comedy to land even better in How to Kill Monsters, but Book of Monsters is exactly the same. It's the same cast.
It's still,
it's
got
a
it
different
all.
Story, but it's the same actors in a very similar thing.
Like,
yeah, and
like
it
a
worked.
Carry On.
Yeah, exactly. And it worked brilliantly, just like it. It was, yeah, laugh out loud funny. I watched it probably 2 weeks ago, and I'd be very surprised if I don't watch it again before my birthday. Yeah, because it's just thoroughly rewatchable. Really enjoyable.
I could quite imagine.
Yeah. Really good fun. Really good effects. Considering the budget they're on, like, it's just, and the gore is fantastic. Yeah. It's just a really, really good fun ride. And again, because you know all the people, and again, I rewatched Eating Miss Campbell again recently as well.
You
see, again, the same actors in that as are in these two. Just a fantastic concept as well. I liked the idea of the story. Yeah, so different enough from How to Kill Monsters, but kind of similar-ish.
Yeah, they're connected, like, sort of follows.
Yeah, yeah, almost like the same story in a different dimension. Or, you know, or a different timeline, but yeah.
It does seem like that is a setup they've got where they could probably do 10 of those before they get boring.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll just watch another one, absolutely.
And because the comedy lands as well,
yeah,
you know, you're in a slightly different scenario.
You are entertained,
but they take
the
jokes in a different direction, yeah, and it just makes it a whole new beast. And, oh yeah, absolutely brilliant. As we said with the other one, the cast in it, so Julie Crane, Michaela Longdon, and Lizzie Aaron Stanton. Yeah, they've got that same chemistry that they had in the other one. Yeah, and they just work so well together. It was brilliant. And Daniel Thrice as well, who's in them both. Yeah, it was just excellent. Really, really good. And again, like a nice hour and a half. So it's not, you'd have to put an entire, you know, if it's 8 o'clock and you haven't put a film on yet, you haven't got that, oh, it's too late to start this now. You could just put it on and have a whale of a time. And yeah, absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, I recommend anybody who hasn't seen either of those, definitely go and check them out, because I'm definitely going to have to watch them when How to Kill Monsters comes out. I'm going to get that as well, and I'm going to watch them back to back, because I think they'd make a brilliant double feature, because it's more of what you want, you know. So, yeah, absolutely brilliant. Thank you, Adam.
Excellent.
You're very welcome, sir. I'm just glad it got there in time for your birthday.
In time, just about, yeah.
Better 2.5 months early than right. So, thanks very much for listening, everybody. Go and check out all the stuff that we've talked about. Quickly, honourable mentions. Chris, have you got any honourable mentions?
Yes. I'll watch something else that's probably not horror, unless you turn it off after the first scene, and then it's definitely horror, and you probably wouldn't allow it on our station. It's Fallout, and it's a dystopian, futuristic, based on the game. Some nuclear bombs go off, and yeah, all hell breaks loose, and then people live in vaults, and it's great. So it just came out on Amazon, and it's the reason that I watched Fire Walk With Me, because Kyle MacLachlan is the father in it who gets kidnapped, and then his daughter, it's her journey out to the surface to try and find him.
That's all over Instagram. He's bloody useless. I follow him on Instagram. He ain't fucking mentioned it.
Oh, he's not in it a lot, but he's in it enough that I'm like, yeah, I like you. I'm going to watch Dune, the one that Lee and you hate.
Of course.
And then I'm like, I'm not going to watch that. I'm going to watch Firewalk with Me instead. Okay.
I hated it.
Did you? That's funny. See, now I remember you both hating it. That's weird.
No. I love it.
I love it. I think it's amazing.
It's so wonderfully perverse.
Yeah. I am going to give it a second go. Now I've seen Dune Part 2, I think I'm going
to...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Because that's the thing as well, is the crippling thing for Dune, like the David Lynch one, is the fact that what they've done now as...
I haven't seen part two yet, but I've heard it is good.
Amazing.
But basically, part two, David Lynch does part two in like 20 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Having done pretty much nearly 2 hours worth of the first half. So
I'm definitely going to give it a go. Yeah, but yeah, part two... Dune was fantastic. I know they were saying it was better than the first one, and I was like, that's pretty hard to top. Yeah, you do it.
So is that actually the end? Is it two parts? There's not a third part.
It's the end of the first book, so it is a self-encapsulated story.
Right, okay. They might,
but it can definitely lead on from where it is.
My understanding is that his intention is to do three films. As you say, Lee, he's now completed the first book, so they're going to move on to the next. I don't know whether it's the next book, the next few books, or you know how they're going to work it. To be honest, but apparently he does want to do it as a trilogy, so he's going to and it's going to continue from the books.
Yeah, can't wait for that because absolute blast, fantastic film.
Oh great, we've got that to look forward to.
Adam, any honourable mentions?
Me and Claire, in our anthology heist, we've chewed through Beasts because it's only six episodes.
Yeah.
Still a highly recommended one.
Yeah.
Really, 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 really enjoyed After Barty's Party. And that led me to watch the Doomwatch episode, Tomorrow the Rat, about rats that become sentient and sort of like a cross between, I don't know, a council office, and Austin Powers sort of works at the council dealing with rat problems, and Fat John Pertwee in a cardigan moans about it. That's one of those weird series that's just sort of like it crosses over into horror a lot because the premise of Doomwatch was, and I think it's a really good idea for a series, is that basically it's a government team that has to investigate science fuck-ups. And so it's all things like bioweapons. And in this particular instance, they're looking to try and develop a cannibalistic rat. But in doing so, they create Rattus sapiens. So it's rats that can think and reason and plug up traps with cutlery and use tools and things like that, who then start attacking humans. So. Nice. It does also feature a man, well, two men, one of whom is a young Robert Powell, having to beat their trousers very ferociously with stuffed rats stuck to them. Because remember, this is the BBC in the 1970s. So, you know, it does. That is, it. No matter how good the episode is, that is forever hilarious. It cannot be unhilarious in any way. I cannot at any point go, No, they've sold me on this enough. You know? Either side of it, I'm in. I'm like, fuck me, they're Nazi rats. But at that point, it's pure fucking Morecambe and Wise.
My honourable mention, or dishonourable mention, as it may be, I finally caught up after everyone raving about Poor Things.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Watch the trailer and then walk away. Is all I have to say. The trailer is all of the funniest bits, and it shows you just how pretty it is, and then you get all of the best gags, and you don't have to waste 2 hours on something I couldn't have given any less of a fuck about if I tried. I didn't even make it to the end. And the thing is, the performances are excellent. The comedy is brilliant. It's a beautiful looking film, but there's something missing from it. It's really hollow. Like, I just couldn't give a shit about it.
I know you also, because I've seen in the trailer, you know, it does look incredible, but I know that you don't like very artificial looking sort of thing where everything is, you know, we're going to overemphasize this, or we're going to sort of, for want of a better expression, painter it up.
Yeah.
Rather than look like a realistic depiction of the day.
Yeah. And it was a bit Wes Anderson and its kind of general meandering and not really like, I mean, it's a very long film and it does go to a lot of different countries and have different bits going on, but somehow it still managed to make them all very boring. So I loved the comedy and stuff, but kind of the worst bit was the bit with no Mark Ruffalo in it, because he was the funniest thing in it. He plays this kind of very rich English bully boy, effectively. He's like a lager lout with millions in his back pocket in Victorian England. He just wants to drink and fight everybody and act like a dickhead.
What you mean is that he's had to play that because Ollie Reed's dead?
Yes, that's exactly
right,
it.
Okay.
Yeah. And I thought he was brilliant. But yeah, there's a big bit in the middle where he isn't in it. And it just felt like the same thing going on and on and on for about half an hour. And And occasionally he'd turn up and be brilliant for 10 seconds and then be ushered off again. And I just couldn't give any less of a fuck about it. So I think I watched about an hour and a half-ish, maybe 2 hours. And then we stopped to record our last episode. And then I just didn't have the heart to go back to it. I just couldn't care less, so I didn't.
You might have missed the important bit.
I'll be honest. I like that director's films. The more I saw of Poor Things, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know if I can be asked, and probably won't now. It's sort of, do you know what I mean? It's like your sort of take on it. I'm sort of, yeah, that was kind of like what I was worried about.
I think I said to you, Adam, it feels like if you got a sort of pretentious college film student and gave them £50 million to make a film, this is what you
get. That's usually my bag, man. But yeah, no, it was just, I think, to be honest, I think it was also me just being a contrarian, that it was like loads of people are going on about
really
it,
big,
but
yeah.
I don't want to know.
And I don't like that. And I know I do it quite often, and I don't do it intentionally, but I think that's the problem. I think when something hits the mainstream and does really well, I go, oh, it's definitely going to be good. And it's kind of, I mean, this is a comedy, it isn't a horror, but effectively it is the Frankenstein story. And I was like, oh, brilliant, that is very much horror. I can definitely watch that and bring it in as the episode.
That's funny, I had no idea what it's about at all, aside from the title, and knowing that Emma Stone is in it and Mark Ruffalo, and I like both of them. Generally, I've liked everything I've seen with them. So I thought, it's probably good.
And Willem Dafoe looking like a peeled eel.
Yeah. I mean, you might like it, Chris, but yeah, okay. I just found it very shallow and pretentious. And
I've got a feeling I might check it out once it's all died down, in so much as...
Yeah.
You know, because at the moment it sort of comes up a lot, and I'm sort of like, and again, it's that sort of thing of, well, I don't want to know too much about it, but what I've heard, I'm like, sort of, yeah, okay.
It's all so... right. I think the thing is, it'd be all right as a Sunday afternoon film, but it was it was the Friday night, end of the week, big night, get the beers in, get a pizza in, get sat down, and then I was just this is fucking dog shit.
I'll be honest, from what I've heard, I don't think it was a Friday night getting the beers in.
Wasn't at all. Anyway, so yes, we better be cracking on because we've gone on far too seriously long enough. So thank you ever so much, everybody, for listening. Go and check out all the stuff that we've talked about that's good. Don't go and check out the things that were wank. And we will see you in a fortnight's time. for the beginning of the Cornetto trilogy. So we'll be here for Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Thanks very much for listening, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.